is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
To London, to Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics, and his column about the EU is helpful to me because I struggle to understand why 27 well-to-do countries with a huge population and, to my understanding right now, self-satisfaction does not grow sufficiently or at all. In addition to that, the country of Britain that used to be in the EU when it was 28 is not only not growing, it's under threat of retreating because of the tax burden necessary by Labour's promises in the most recent election. We begin with the EU in general, however. Joe, you put the question very bluntly in your column. There are 450 million people in the European Union, and they do very well, thank you very much, and have for the last 80 years. And yet, they're not growing. At the same time, they punish each other with high entry costs for buying each other's products, and they don't buy each other's products much. I mentioned to you that I have German vacuum cleaners. They're very good. I'm not sure that Germany buys its own manufactured goods, such as a vacuum cleaner. That's not a huge item to invest in. Why doesn't Europe shop in Europe? Good evening to you, Joe.
Hey, John. Yeah, I mean, this has been a big question because taking a step back, I mean, so people over here have been freaking out over President Trump's tariffs and the U.S. trade war. You know, sometimes the rates he talks about are higher for the European Union. Sometimes they're a bit lower. It's hard to know what the policy is. And of course, now there's all of this uncertainty about whether he has the legal authority to do any of this. I mean, we know now that that question is working its way through the courts. But I thought it was worth taking a step back and asking this question. Why does Europe care so much about the Trump tariffs? I mean, I take the point that we're in a globally interconnected economy now, and there are enormous flows of trade and investment across the Atlantic in both directions. But Europe is a continent of approaching 450 million people, and it bills itself as this huge free trade economic bloc. They certainly are trying to throw around their economic weight on the world stage. So why is it that this tariff threat from the U.S. seems to be leaving them so confused and perplexed? And I think that one conclusion is that the Trump era is exposing anew a bunch of weaknesses in the European economy that leaders over here have often preferred not to talk about. You know, those are things like barriers to internal trade within the EU. So they like to think of themselves as a single market, but there are so many different national regulations that you have to deal with if you want to ship a good from Spain to Poland, say, or from Lithuania to France. You know, that trade isn't really free. If you're a licensed professional, like a doctor or a lawyer or an architect, it's really difficult for you to move around in the bloc. So there's not free trade in services. And then, I mean, you have all of these domestic policies, like the economic regulations, the very high taxes that make it very difficult for them to prosper economically. And so, you know, a consequence of this, which is making their life so difficult in the Trump era, is that Europe is falling materially behind the U.S. in terms of the per capita standard of living. I think that they're roughly 35% poorer per capita than Americans are at this point. It's becoming a very noticeable gap. And that is something that predated Donald Trump, even though I think that Trump's threatened trade wars are now exacerbating a lot of these problems and also kind of calling attention to them.
I go to one statistic in your column that surprised me, the explanation for it. But then I remembered services is what the U.S. does very well. And we do a lot of services business with Europe, with the European Union and Britain. You write, for services, the costs of complying with different national rules in the EU are equivalent to 110% tariff. Joe, 110%? Now, what constitutes services? Is that Silicon Valley? Is that law offices? What is services to the EU?
Well, so services is anything that's not a manufactured good. So it can be anything like if you hire an architect, you're purchasing a service. You know, if you open a bank or a brokerage account, you're buying investment services or financial services from that firm. And, you know, what we're talking about here is that there is supposed to be a single market within the European Union. It is supposed to be as easy to trade between the countries that are in the EU as it is to trade across state lines in the US. Now, you know, in the U.S., that trade isn't completely free because each state has their own regulations in some areas. But for the most part, we have pretty open trade within the U.S. between our different states. So you can do, as, you know, as an economist, you can sit down and you can say, well, okay, if we add up the costs of complying with all of these regulations that you have to do if you're shipping a good across state lines in the U.S., if we pretended that Florida and Texas were independent countries, what would the equivalent tariff be? You know, what would the tariff level be that's equivalent to sort of the cost of doing that trade? And in the U.S., tends to be about 15%, which is probably more than it should be. But, you know, ultimately, we can have a very, very healthy economy that way. Well, in Europe, if you look at the cost of complying with the regulations that you have to do if you are shipping goods from Portugal to Slovenia, for example, you know, those costs, those regulatory compliance costs, start adding up very quickly. And that can amount, it can be as if there were a tariff of about 45% on manufactured goods on average, even though technically it's supposed to be a single market where they say that there are no internal tariffs. And for services, it can be a much, much higher figure. And that's because, for example, if you are a doctor who is licensed in Italy, it can be very difficult for you to transfer that license to, say, the Netherlands or, you know, Sweden or other EU member countries without going through a bunch of onerous additional procedures. So there isn't really free trade in medical services. There isn't free trade in architectural services. There isn't free trade in financial services. You know, in each of these areas on down the line, each member country has their own expensive rules to comply with, which mean that there isn't a free market over here. So part of their distress when they then face competitive problems like the challenge from China or the economic threat of the Trump tariffs is that Europe itself is a dysfunctional market. It is way underperforming its potential or the promise that was made to a lot of people about how freely you would be able to function within the bloc. And that has big implications for holding back their potential for economic growth.
And yet, let's speak of Washington just a moment. You mentioned in your column that Mr. Trump, he calls up the 1970s when he talks about Europe ripping us off or taking advantage of America. How so, Joe?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the things that is a bit strange is why is Trump so focused on Europe? I mean, trade with Europe had not previously been controversial. I mean, trade with China has been controversial for a long time. And some of us even remember that there was controversy about trade with Mexico in particular in the context of NAFTA back in the 90s. Why Europe? And I think it's because he has a hang up about West Germany, not Germany, West Germany. Because remember, I think that for people who came of age in the 70s and 80s, the formative economic story that people lived through was the fact that Japan and West Germany by that point had fully reindustrialized after the Second World War and were starting to sell goods to America and becoming competitive with American industries like the auto industry or steel that had become really fat and happy and uncompetitive. So, you know, I think that Trump seems to have really absorbed that episode in history. But the global economy and the U.S. economy has changed so much since then that we do have to recognize that there is an element of, you know, a very anachronistic view of the world represented by all of his fulminations against Europe.
And so while Mr. Trump is out of date, Europe is in a quandary as to the way forward. They want to go back to the way it used to be. In other words, the 1970s, they sell to us. We don't buy from them. I mean, no, we buy from them. They don't buy from us. That's what they want.
That seems to be the aspiration, or sort of this hope for an industrial economy in the U.S. that had its heyday in the 50s and 60s. But it was always much more of an aberration historically than what we're living through right now, actually. Because remember, in the 50s and 60s, the U.S. didn't have any global competition. Before the war, Japan and Germany had been great industrial powerhouses that were pretty much destroyed in the course of the war. So, you know, if World War II had not happened, we would have been accustomed throughout the 20th century to fierce economic competition from those parts of the world. And we just would have been used to it. And we wouldn't have had this experience of what seemed like this golden age in the middle of the 20th century when America didn't have any competitors. And then this wrenching experience when all of a sudden those competitors came back online again.
Is the solution for Europe to heal itself, would that do it, Joe, if they address these matters directly?
Well, that's certainly the solution for Europe. And there are a couple of leaders over here who sort of get it a little bit more or a little bit less. Friedrich Merz in Germany is showing a little bit of promise on the score of economic reform to try to really revive growth. But that is going to have to be the big piece of the puzzle here. I think that European leaders are going to have to get serious about economic growth and understand that that is really the solution to most of the problems that they perceive right now.
Life in London for Mr. Starmer, life in Scotland for Mr. Farage. When we come back, Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics. He's in London. It's springtime. What's not to like? I'm John Batchelor.